This is Bird Request Part 2.
It's time for your Sunrise Guys, Dirk and Sprague.
First we get the bard out.
Andy Dirk Johnson.
That's the American Woodcock.
Brandon Sprague.
Then the American Crow.
Dirt and Sprague on the Fan Sports Network.
Keep up the requests, guys.
Hey, welcome back in. Hour number two. Dirt and Sprague, your Portland sports leader, 105.1 FM, The Fan, 1080 AM, the Odyssey app, live on YouTube. Good morning, everybody. Happy Tuesday to you. Don't forget, coming up about 2 hours from now, we got the mail sack. It is a mail sack. Sparta TRT mail sack Tuesday.
Yes.
Time to crank up the
It is tea time, baby. It is tea time. I'm already planning out my week zero meal. What do I want to make? How's it going to look? Ooh. It's not even that good of a slate, but I don't care, man. I do not care. I got to go to a baby shower this weekend, albeit for my own baby, but I have to go to that. And the Saturday, the wife's going to be gone planning stuff, so I got to watch kiddo most of the day. Week zero, you're paying it back to me. It's week zero.
That's true.
Right?
Next week, hops. Final week-long homestand.
It's almost done, man. It's almost over.
So, yeah. So, that'll be busy.
Yeah.
I'll be grabbing something.
grab and go. Grab and go for week zero. But that's all right. I'm going to slow cook something. We'll figure it out. Lots to get to in this hour of radio. Welcome in to the cafe, everybody. Hope your mornings are off to a good start.
Looks like a line. I wanted to grab a seat.
Oh, yeah. There's a table over here. We're ready for you. Don't you worry about it. We're just going to go with the hearty American traditional breakfast today. Some scrambled eggs, a couple of pieces of toast, some bacon, some sausage. Some hash browns. How's that sound to you?
There
Keep
you
it
go.
Simple.
We
Throw a little
that.
Tabasco on there, a little salt and pepper on there. Mix it all together. I'm a happy man. That's all I need.
Okay.
So we're going to keep it simple today. That's how we're going to roll. Let's hold on. I got to find my page here. Here we go.
Order up. Fly ball. That's to right. That's back. That is gone. Ball game. PCA walks it off in the 10th. And the Cubs knock out the Sox in 10.
Pete Crow Armstrong last night. That's John Ciambi on the Marquee Network hit a walk-off home run. I believe I read he became the 7th player all time to hit a leadoff home run to open the game.
Ooh.
And a walk-off home run in the same game. I think the list was 7.
I think he's going to be your National League MVP.
You think PCA is going to win the National League MVP this year?
I believe so.
It was a pretty cool highlight. Also, the tongue-in-cheek nature of the John Ciambi call there. If you did not see, they're playing the White Sox. It's a crosstown rival. And there was a massive brawl in the bleachers at Wrigley Field last night. They were throwing haymakers at each other. That stuff, people were filming it from different angles. And so that went viral on social media last night. And so his little tongue-in-cheek, knock out the White Sox and knock them out and win the game. Pete Crow Armstrong is having a terrific year. He's also a funny player in terms of, I feel like as somebody who doesn't watch the Cubs closely, I see highlights of him doing this and you're like, oh my God, he's an incredible player. And then, like, once every other week, he has a low light where he just loses track of a fly ball or he doesn't know how to run the bases and he does something really stupid and then fans kind of boo him. And then he hits a walk-off home run and he's back. But to your point, probably the favorite right now to win the National League MVP. What are the odds on that market right now?
Ooh, let's go.
Is he legitimately the favorite or is there good value on it?
MLB futures.
Yeah, what is
awards. He's the no, Shohei is
Shohei's
now a
the
slight favorite, minus 105.
He also hit a home run last night.
He hit two.
Two home runs.
Minus 115 on Pete Crow Armstrong. No, there was the series a couple of weeks ago where the Cubs handled the Doyers.
Yeah.
And he actually, in doing so, became the favorite over Shohei for the first time
for a brief
all
moment,
season.
Yeah.
So it's going to be neck and neck. It depends. If the Dodgers get Shohei back pitching this year and he does some things pitching, that might put him over the top.
Yeah.
But Pete Crow Armstrong's been far more clutch for the Cubs than Shohei has been clutch for the Dodgers this season.
He's having an awesome year, man. He's having an awesome year. He is.
It's over in the American League. Yordan Alvarez is winning that award,
he's
and
carrying
it's not close.
281, 30 home runs, 78 RBIs.
He's in line for a triple crown.
PCA is?
No.
Or Yordan, okay.
Alvarez.
Look, this is the time of year where I've totally tuned out of baseball.
Well, PCA,
now we start tuning back in.
30-30, it's like him and Sammy are the only guys that have done 30-30 seasons with the Cubs.
It's pretty remarkable, and it's back-to-back years for him, if I'm not wrong. I think
so.
He did one last year.
Yeah.
Cool little highlight last night, the Cubs went in a walk-off. I also, in just looking that up and sending that to you to poll, I took a quick gander, and if you would have asked me, I would not have been able to tell you. I did not realize that the Chicago White Sox were in first place.
Yeah. It's like the first time in like
four and a half
nearly
games.
20 years that the two yes. teams have met after the All-Star break and they
being
both
in first
been
place.
Over 500.
Both over 500?
Yeah.
Holy hell. I guess that makes sense because there's been differing versions of tanking teams on both sides of it. The White Sox being in first place literally blew my mind. I know that they've been better this year and respectable.
Well, also the AL Central isn't.
I mean, it sucks. The Tigers are three games below 500. The AL West and AL Central.
The Orioles right now, I think, are four games under 500 in the third wild card slot.
They are 14 and a half games out of their division.
How you feeling, Mariner fans? You're still 2.5 back of that.
I get why we have divisions. You have to have scheduling purposes.
Is it too early to needle Mariner fans?
It's never too early. Okay. I enjoy it at any time of the day. Divisions are so ridiculous in cases like this. Of the second place team in the AL Central is the Tigers. They're 61-64. The second place team in the AL West is the Rangers. They're 61-64. And both of those teams are mathematically alive in their division chase
That's
and
right.
can get to the playoffs. It's absolutely ludicrous.
Mariners are at the Brewers, the best record in all of baseball here for the next 3 days.
Now, they should not get the Miz, right? Because he just threw in L.A.,
no,
so I'd imagine he's not going to throw in that series.
Let me find it here for you. Kyle Harrison, who's had a fine season.
Yeah, it's a guy we traded for Rafael Devers. That's really cool.
They get the Dustin May. Former Dodger.
Dustin May's a Brewer now, huh?
So he was a deadline. Yeah, he started the season with the Cardinals, and then they dealt him at the deadline. So that's Wednesday, and then Thursday is a matinee, and that will be George Kirby and Robert Gasser.
Okay. Well, one other baseball note, because my team's not worth talking about. Did you see who we're calling up? Have you seen a picture of this guy?
No.
So we're calling up a relief pitcher we got in a trade earlier this year. I think it was the Patrick Bailey trade to Cleveland. His nickname is Tugboat. Now, you imagine, if you got a nickname Tugboat, where's your head going?
Exactly.
He weighs 275 pounds. He legitimately looks like a right guard.
Wow.
And I got to tell you, it's probably the most exciting thing my team's done in quite some time.
How did you get these guys so, this is such a hungry-ass team. We were still hungry after the first one, but you still felt like this dude got paid, this dude's starting to feel himself, this dude's pissed off, he's not getting enough money. You don't feel nothing here but grind, work.
I don't know. It's just like what we do, you know?
But that's easier said than done.
Well, I think, you guys were, you were tight, but you were, edgy.
Yeah.
We have edge, but we were I don't know. It's a different, just a different different dynamic of team.
Yeah, I agree with that.
So that is an early clip from what will be tonight's episode, right? It didn't come out last night. I think it's every
tonight.
Tuesday night. I thought it was tonight. Richard Sherman, who showed up to Seahawks training camp and was walking around talking with Mike McDonald. That quote of him said, I don't know. It's almost the perfect quote of him where he's equal parts captivating and just it's an enigma.
And unassuming.
And very unassuming and boring at times.
Well, I think I think because it's just the culture he laid when he
we
didn't do anything. There's no special sauce here.
No.
We've been careful about guys we've selected, not only from a talent standpoint, from a culture standpoint. And we've cultivated this now for a few seasons, so this is just who we are rather than there wasn't some magic epiphany that we...
Something I've always thought about...
Snapped your fingers is the one thing. Figure out the one thing. And
right. Yeah, there's not some... Yeah, I'm with you there, and I think that's why he answered.
And so that's why
I
think he didn't know how to articulate. He's
I also love the polite way in which he tried to say, yeah, you guys kind of low-key hated each other.
Well,
that's
they also didn't
ended.
Have a polarizing quarterback like Russell Wilson that made people...
People didn't like him in that locker room.
Darnold is one of the dudes. Dude, that's the one. He's one of the guys.
There was an interview. Marshawn Lynch just did an interview. I actually shouldn't say just. I don't know when it happened, but I saw clips of it recently. He did Shannon Sharpe's podcast, I think it was. And he was talking about Russell Wilson early in the Seattle days. And he said when they drafted Russell Wilson and fall camp started, they all kind of knew, like, this guy's probably going to be the starter.
This is going in the right direction. You get that sense. It's like, oh, this guy's got command.
He's got command. He's playing well. Like, okay, this is going good. He's going to be the starter.
And he can sling the ball.
And Marshawn said at that moment, going into his rookie year, he reached out to somebody from the I don't know why he couldn't just do this in the locker room. It kind of sums up why this was all complicated.
Well,
and
Marshawn's a weird dude anyway.
He's a very weird dude. But he said, look, I'm your running back. You're going to lean on me a ton. I'm kind of the focal point of the offense. Because I believe the year before, the whole Madee game was without Russell Wilson, if I'm not wrong, right? That was before Russell Wilson got there, I think.
Yeah.
When they won the wild card game as a below 500 team, and then Wilson got there. Anyways, he said that he had to reach out to somebody from the team to get Russell Wilson's phone number. He then sent him, either called him or texted him and gave him a like, hey, man, I just want to let you know, Brooke, welcome to the team. I'm here if you need anything. You and I are going to work together. Like, let you know, I'm here for you. Basically, just like, I'm a vet on the team. You're a rookie. Welcome to the team. Let me know if I can help. And he said he got a phone call back from a blocked number. And that Russell Wilson returned to the phone call. And Marshawn didn't answer it at the first because it just shows up as a blocked number. Yeah. And he reached out to the person at the team and said, hey, Russ never got back to me. Did you give me the right number? And the person said, oh, no, that was Russ. He was calling you back. He was calling him back from a blocked phone number. And it just, I mean, that in a nutshell explains the difference between the two sides. And I certainly, like, Russell Wilson was good for that team. I've always wondered from the outside looking in of where that would have gone had they had a quarterback that was beloved by his teammates. Had you had, like, Sam Darnold is that in that locker room. Yeah. You watch him walking around.
He's one of the dudes.
The culture is great. There was another clip that went viral. I didn't pull it, but Witherspoon obviously just got paid. And they put out a clip of him walking into the locker room the first day or the first moment after the announcement was made of the contract.
Everybody's
giving him high fives and celebrating and all that stuff.
There might be
and
a joke is like, you got the next dinner or something like that.
Dinner's on you, yeah.
But that's as far as that goes.
Right. There's a good camaraderie there. And I think a lot of it stems from you don't have Russell Wilson at quarterback.
Order up.
We were just talking about this, but here's an in-depth explanation of how chaotic this entire thing is.
This has really been a family drama since Dr. Buff passed away in 2013. In 2017, there was a court order after the older brothers, that's Johnny and Jimmy, tried to stage a coup to get Jeannie out as the controlling owner and take control of the family trust. There's a court order that said there's three new trustees, and it's Janie, that's the sister, that's her younger sister, and Joey, who is one of the younger brothers. And that order says you can't sell the team without the approval of all three of those. And she's the head of the board of directors. And so her lawyer today has invoked that order. Now, from what I can tell you, three of these siblings got fired back in November and they were not happy about it. There was a vote about three, four months ago, I heard in April, and they only had three votes at that point. But after the sale that Mark Walter did with Josh Kushner and with Bob Iger last week, this had already been kind of discussed on the table. They got two more votes, and now they have five. And so they believe that they are allowed to sell even without her because of what's called a tag-along provision that was part of the sale to Mark Walter, which is, hey, if Mark Walter ever sells, we can tag along with whatever valuation he gets. So he got 12.5. We're deciding to tag along with that sale, and they believe they have the votes to do that. And so guess where this ends up? Amongst the lawyers and in court, and it's really just over the 17.8% that the Buss family controls. But the most important part of that 17.8% is that she has control and the controlling ownership of the Lakers for the next 4 years as part of her agreement with Mark Walter. So that's really what's on the table here.
Yeah, the chaos of family drama and ownership. This would be the biggest concern I would have if you ever got to that point of an evil billionaire owning a franchise and you want to pass it down to your kids, thinking about them fighting over that asset. When you see the families that are able to work together and kind of make it work, it's inspiring of like, dude, this is a once
for
in a...
For all the nonsense of Jerry Jones, and he's worked his...
I don't see that happening in Dallas. The kids are all working there.
They all work together. They all have a different role.
Who will be the governor? It'll be Steven, right?
I believe
Steven.
So.
Yeah. He seems to be the most in the forefront. I did watch the Cowboy documentary on Netflix, and it was a lot of Jerry Jones fluff, like as we can imagine. But yeah, it was interesting to get to know like the backstory. His daughter works there and does a ton of stuff.
Yeah,
he wanted the whole family to work
she
together.
Does a lot of the community outreach and
ton of that stuff,
PR and marketing,
yeah.
All that.
They're all over the Cowboy organization. But yeah, look, the Lakers are going to be fine because of the Lakers. None of this
but
is
no,
that big of a deal.
Rich families with lawyers.
They're haggling.
Yeah.
They're haggling right now. Let's see. We got time for two more, I think.
Order up!
This one does not include audio, but I did want to bring it up because I think it's an example of sometimes I'm sure the money is nice, but is it in the best interest of your sport? I personally think the NBA is going through this right now. The idea of putting weekday games on a streaming platform has never, like, outside of the NFL, I just have a hard time seeing that be a thing that grows the sport in the long term. Now, the NBA is an extreme case of this because they got games on Amazon every week. And for people who like to flip around and watch TV normally, you're now asking me to open up a secondary app and essentially go straight to that app just to watch that game, right?
Yep.
And Amazon's paying you a lot of money, so financially it's good for your league. From a viewership and growing the sport standpoint, I don't think it's that good, right?
No.
So that's where there's a yin and yang.
That's where I think the MLS whiffed with the Apple.
Without a doubt they did.
And you didn't allow your local teams to keep a local separate TV deal.
Yes, you have to have a local TV deal involved so people in your market can watch the team and get involved.
There's some things that you need to trip over when you're channel surfing.
Thank you.
On whatever platform you're on.
Another example of that is a property for Major League Baseball that was very profitable and included some very high ratings. And considering it's a regular season game, and they cratered. So this year...
Oh, the Field of Dreams game?
The Field of Dreams game just happened. Was that last Wednesday,
last
I think
Thursday.
It was? Last Thursday, thank you. I pointed out and bemoaned the fact that this is the first full slate of preseason football. Why would you not put this on a different night? It's also now on Netflix. It's not on Fox. It had
Twins
been on Fox.
And Phillies, I think it was.
Now, the game sucked. It was 7-1, but Schwarber hit a bleed-off bomb.
Schwarber hit a couple into the cornfield.
They had a lot of Hall of Famers there walking out of the corn. It was a whole thing, right? And in the ratings, they came out. So the first time they did it, it got well over 5 million. It was a massive coup for baseball.
Well, and that was the first time.
Novelty,
thing,
all
and
that.
The White Sox, and they made a whole.
It was a huge deal, right? The last one that they had on Fox reported well over 3.1 million viewers, which for a regular season baseball game is amazing, right? The numbers at this event, where did it go?
Yeah.
Was down basically just barely north of 1 million viewers.
Yeah.
So they were cut in third. Now, it was a blowout game. They decided for whatever reason to schedule it against the start of the NFL preseason. And it's an example of, I'm sure Netflix paid a pretty penny for this. This is where the other leagues.
This is where there's something
exposure
over the bottom line.
Yes.
And for these signature things.
You cannot look at the NFL and say, well, they do it, because you're not the NFL.
No, the
people
NFL's
will
different.
Go buy Peacock to watch a playoff game because we're sickos. We got a problem.
Yeah.
You're not doing that for a regular season basketball game.
Nope.
Or the Field of Dreams game has been fun, and I've enjoyed it. But
what did the Home Run Derby end up doing?
It was horrible, I think, in terms of years previous.
Because was that Prime Video or Netflix?
That was Netflix.
Okay.
Yeah.
And there wasn't anything wrong with the production. I thought that I think they had too many people.
Yes.
But
not as big of a drop as I thought. Right around 5 million. The average from years previous was they lost about 1 million viewers.
Okay.
About 1 million shorter.
Yeah.
And I would argue that the format that they came up with this year was more compelling
was
and interesting
better.
Than
it
what it had been in
it
years
well
past.
It was well produced.
Yeah.
You had too many people, and you didn't need all the people that you needed, and the Will Ferrell thing was
that
not
was
necessary.
Whiff.
But.
Yeah. Overall household television metrics dipped it was a 23-year low for the Home Run Derby. Because it's I'm not going out of my way to go open a street because I'm flipping around.
Plus, Major League, I know you're trying to get to a younger demographic, but you can't alienate your older demographic that pays your bills.
Yeah. It's a weird conundrum that other leagues, other than the NFL, can do whatever they want, dude.
Yeah.
They could put a game on PBS. And
the biggest thing, all these sports need to figure out, and I wonder, and the stupid FCC blackout rules and all that other nonsense, if you buy the season package, like I'm paying for extra innings or league pass or Sunday ticket or whatever, that supersedes everything else. Because as a percentage of the total viewers, I don't think it's that much of a significant percentage
that
it affects. And I don't know who you're protecting with the blackout. Like, if you get
ludicrous.
In there You watch anything. There's no more. Doesn't matter if it's a one-off. The Sunday Night Football. What, you get everything.
Yeah.
If you're going to pay the premium.
Let me get all the content.
Just one spot. I'm watching. And then now. And then after that, if you divvy it all up, then whatever.
Right. It's a weird conundrum to be in. Good money, bad ratings. The Field of Dreams game from last week. I don't know if anybody out there watched it. I turned it on at the start just to see what it looked like, and it was the novelty of it was cool for a second. Then I'm like, all right, back to football. So maybe all of you were the same as well. There is your cafe. Tip your servers. Thank you, everybody, for coming to my breakfast joint. Got some bits of audio we did not play there that we'll kick down to later in the show. A couple of NFL storylines that are coming into the start of the season. Let's dive back, though, into something from yesterday. The AP poll, some odds and ends, and something happening in this conference for the first time in a very long time. We'll explain. And also, how does it diminish the start of the season? We'll tell you about that as well. So a little college football talk next on The Fam. All right, welcome back in. 7:30 on your Tuesday morning. Don't forget, we got the mail sack coming up. So get your questions in to the fan text line. We'll do that coming up in the final hour of the show.
Mail sack.
It's a good-looking sack today, man. Good-looking sack. 503-864-6326. Keep them coming, and we will... answer them at 9 o'clock this morning. We got some NFL stuff coming up in the next hour of the show, and some injury news on guys, contracts getting handed out, and a big year for one quarterback and coach. And we'll talk all about all of that coming up at the top of the hour. But yesterday, in the final hour of the show, we got the release of the AP poll. It happened at 9 a.m. Love a good AP poll release. Gives us something to talk about, something to chew on. I'm all for it. I'm not anti-preseason polls. I just think we need context behind them. I'm going to throw some odds and ends at you because I did as I'm digging through this. I'm like, man, this, you know, some interesting stuff in this. You have been hinting at one in your, telling us about one in your updates. Oregon has never started the season ranked higher than this.
No, they were three. Was it a couple years ago? A
couple years ago, they were number three. They've had
maybe last year. I don't know.
Maybe the Mariota year, maybe, potentially.
Maybe, yeah.
They've had some years being ranked number three. Last year, they were in three. They were a little bit lower than that.
Oh,
some
that's
questions
right.
coming into the year.
Yeah.
Might have been the Gabriel year, though, where they went undefeated and then damn near lost to Idaho in week one. So yeah. You never know what's going to happen. So Oregon has never started this high in the preseason AP poll. They've never been the preseason AP number one team. So it's the last one for them to accomplish. This is the first time since 2015. That was 11 years ago, 2015, that there has not been a single SEC team to get a first-place vote in the poll.
That's what caught my eye when it first came out yesterday.
Not a single one, man. I scrolled through, by the way, the Reddit college football page, if you follow that on social media, they put out the voter-by-voter breakdown graphic of
go.
It. It is now out. You can go see it.
All right.
Brenna Green is our local representative.
Okay.
I don't know if anybody else locally votes. That was the only name I recognized on the list.
There might be somebody, sometimes somebody from Eugene.
Maybe there's,
guard.
Could be. I know John Wilner still has a first. He just has a Pac-12 logo next to his name. He doesn't cover a team specifically. So he's in there. John Wilner's in there. Anyways, no SEC team's got a first-place vote. That has not happened since 2015.
I think that's because most people can't decide who the best team in the SEC is because there's not one that appears to be head and shoulders above everybody else. They're all good.
They're all good.
They're all, you know, there's four or five teams that are all stacked and have great rosters, but
right.
Are they that much better than LSU, Georgia, Tennessee,
right. To go
Texas,
team by team,
Oklahoma,
it's tough.
Like, yeah. Okay.
So to add on top of that, the Big Ten is dominating the sport right now. They've won three straight national championships as a conference. This is the first time the Big Ten has had the preseason number one and number two team in the AP poll since 1961. Iowa and Ohio State with one and two.
I was going to say, well, it was either Ohio State and Michigan in there, maybe both
right,
of them.
Yeah, right, since
Iowa.
1961.
Was Kirk Ferentz coaching?
Probably. He was probably an assistant. Maybe he was playing at Iowa in 1961. Probably on the roster as a secondary guy.
He's the punter.
He was the guy getting the punts in. Number one and number two, they've been 2 and 3 in each of the last three preseason polls, so they just slid up a slot. They've been close. Just kind of a random oddity. Last year, and this is kind of a lingering question that I have, that I'm curious where people are at. Like, Indiana is still in the process of breaking my brain over what they did last season. It's just like, I know that they won the title. There's still an aspect of like, Indiana. It's just weird. It's hard to wrap your hands around. Right? It's one of the best coaching jobs we've ever seen. As much as I bemoan his non-conference scheduling philosophies and don't like the arrogance involved in that, nobody has anything to take away from Kurt Cignetti as a coach. They entered the season preseason ranked number 20 in the preseason poll last year. Indiana did.
Correct.
They then went on to go, obviously, 16-0 and win the national championship. In the college football playoff era, so that started in 2014 when we went to the playoff, there has only been one team, and they are the only one,
yep,
to start the season outside of the top six to win a national championship. Now, this year might be a little bit different because I think people look at, we do this with like quarterback tiers in the NFL.
Right.
Where like the top seven teams kind of look like, meh, you can interchange any of them in any spot. Do we feel like as time goes on, Indiana will be the outlier or they will be the rule? Because for now, they are an outlier. That's only happened one time where a team right outside of the top six has won a national championship from the preseason polls. So we can laugh at preseason polls all we want.
Well, I think if you expand, if you expand the playoff group,
you think it'll lead to more Indianas or less Indianas?
Well, Indiana's different because that was more, we don't trust yet. Are they a one-year wonder or whatever? But by expanding it, you create more opportunities for there to be weird upsets when you get to the playoff, if there's key injuries. And so, because before, you had to get into the top four, and the only way you get up there is to start near there.
Had to be 11-1 or 12-0
essentially. So you go to 16 or 20 or 24 teams, the probability for chaos when you get to the playoff is higher. I don't know how high it is, but it is higher.
Yeah, I agree with
that. So you are more likely to see a team that might start, you know, 8th or 10th or 12th based on, okay, they're on this side of the bracket. Oh, the number one seed just got knocked out. Now they got a, you know, they dodged a bullet, that sort of thing.
It's situation. An easier game, either easier pathway. I totally understand that logic. The other side of the coin for me, too, would just simply be, In a format where it's four, now you had a much different, much to your point, a more difficult pathway to get into the top four, but you also only had to win two games against elite teams.
Right.
Now, if you expand it, elite is too loose of a word to use for teams who are like 8-4 getting in as the 20 seed. That's not the argument I'm making, but you do have to win more games on your way to get there.
You have to play more games. There's more potential for injuries to key players.
To your own team, right? It just, to me, in that way, it's challenging.
Fluky crap happens. Weather at that time of year could factor into it.
For sure,
Cam. There's more opportunity for randomness to occur. Mm. Than with a limited field.
It's just one. It's a thing that I'm keeping an eye on. Not necessarily just the ranking, although I did find that stat interesting where we poo-poo preseason rankings, and then until last year, every year of the CFP era, a team in the top six in the preseason won the national championship. So
and
we
as
a good
you continue to
that.
See recruiting and the distribution of top talent get spread out with NIL, and you see that's what we see now with Georgia and Alabama, you can't stack – you know, five-star after five-star after five-star. Okay, my junior five-star gets hurt. I have a freshman five-star who's now learning on the job, but he is going to be an NFL player, just going to take him a little. That doesn't occur anymore.
Not as much as
or
it used
not
to,
as
man.
Much.
Yeah, not as much as it used to. So Indiana, the only team to start the season outside of the top six and win the national championship. They did it last year. This year, they are in the top six. So if they do that, they will not be a candidate of that as well. If you're looking for a reason to feel optimistic about Ohio State not winning the national title, which I'm sure most people probably root against Ohio State in this neck of the woods. Every time that they have been ranked number one in the AP preseason poll, it has happened eight other times. This is the ninth time. They have never won the national championship in one of those seasons. So they are 0-8 in seasons ranked preseason number one. So if you're looking for something to be optimistic about, also how the mighty have fallen. Remember that era of college football where we had like a almost 3 or 4 year stretch where it was Alabama or Clemson in the title game every year.
Yes.
And the Dabo and the Nick Saban eras. Dabo's still there. Alabama is starting the season ranked 13th in the AP poll. That snaps a 17-year streak of them being in the preseason top 10, excuse me. That is the second longest streak in poll history. So the first time it's in 17 years that they have been ranked outside of the top 10 in the preseason poll. And how about this one? One more for you. Although I'm hearing some scuttlebutt, the people down there are feeling encouraged about this year's team. We'll wait and see on that front. This is the first time since 2011. What were you doing in 2011? You're probably still producing primetime, right? This. Yeah. Well, not this show. Were you doing primetime in 2011? Or were you off of primetime by then? Were you doing the morning run?
I can't remember when we started
when the change
up.
Happened and all that. This is the first time since 2011 that Clemson is unranked in the preseason poll. Has not happened since 2011. So just some random odds and ends to throw at you that I had to was digesting a lot of news bits yesterday on the AP poll. I love it. It means college football is almost here.
And again, no group of six teams are in the top 25.
Not a single one, man. Not a single one. Boise State is the closest, and that's who Oregon plays to open their season. And that will connect to what I want to get to next. I had an Oregon State thing and a Pac-12 thing. I'm gonna boot that down just a hair. We'll get to that in the next hour of the show because there's one more angle of this. I ran about this quite often, and I thought, again, with the poll coming out yesterday and the way the season begins, it's kind of on display of an area that just it needs an overhaul desperately. And I'll explain what that is. We'll get to it. A little more college football next, 105.1 FM The Fam. Well, they keep coming in. The fantasy football punishments, it's been a bit of a theme of the show today. We opened the show talking about that, the very hungry caterpillar one that went viral yesterday. I just saw another one where the loser of the league had to run a 5K while wearing a suit. Yeah. Look, I'm not going to sit here and act like I'm the most in-shape individual. The only question I would have in this regard would be, what shoes am I wearing?
Yeah, it's all about the shoes.
If I'm wearing dress shoes, that's a pain in the absolute butt.
Yeah.
If you get to wear a suit with, like, a pair of Nikes,
Well, I think there's things like you could wear, because they have like the dress sneakers now.
There's dress sneakers.
You could probably find a way to find a happy medium and not kill your feet. I'm not wearing wingtips doing it.
Right. Like that's when that becomes a difficult challenge. It's does not say anything about the shoes. I'm just watching the video of the guy.
You know, screw up, you know, my hips or my back.
For fantasy football. Where did this one go? Somebody texted one. The listeners who jump in late because they're doing...
podcast
listeners, or you're just waking up. Good morning to you all. Hello, everybody. Most successful punishment we did for fantasy was a loser received two Nickelback shirts and had to wear them for the entire week while we were in Vegas. That doesn't even sound like a punishment. Sounds like a good time. I just wear one occasionally just to keep myself, you know, make sure you're staying tight.
Fantastic.
A little more college football for you. That I was noodling on, and you mentioned something earlier in the show. It was funny. I actually had it in my notes today because I know I'm a bit of a broken record on this topic, but it's a big frustration of mine because I'm a huge college football guy. I love college football. I have a personal relationship with the sport from my time at Oregon, right? I've been going to games since I was a kid. The NFL will always be the NFL and hold a near and dear place to my heart, but I don't have a very... Yeah, I don't have that close of a, in terms of the way I do with college, I don't have that same level of relationship with it because we don't have a team here. And, you know, I've been to NFL games before. I've been to a game in Seattle. I've been to a game in Carolina. So, I've been to a couple NFL games.
If you go to an NFL game, you're going for the game. If you go to college football, you want to get there early.
It's an environment, right? And you can do that in the NFL if you want.
And what's the tailgate like? Yeah. And, you know, the bands and the whole everything.
There's something about it that makes me...
There's a little more camaraderie. Like, yes. People will needle you. Like, if you're going with your team to watch at an opposing venue, most places, they'll tease you.
Yeah.
But they're accommodating and, you know, you say, hey, what do I need to take in or whatever? They want to show off their piece of the pageantry to you.
Without a doubt, because everybody's got something unique
NFL,
and different.
They just hate each other.
Yeah, that is certainly true. So as somebody who loves the sport, I always bemoan the way that it begins. And this will be an example. We'll probably talk about this a ton next week. The season essentially begins a week from Saturday. But it's a week where not everybody plays. You only have a small number of games. The first game of the season is in Ireland, an American sport opening their season in Ireland, when we should be playing this on college campuses. If that game's at TCU and they're heckling Bill Belichick, like...
Second game of the NFL season's in Australia.
Again, it's a corporate thing. I get the NFL and why they want to do it. It's stupid that they do it, but I get why they... This is college football, man. Are people in Ireland going to enroll at TCU now because TCU's playing there? No, but people might watch the NFL in Australia because they're going there, and that's what the NFL cares about. To me, they're very different things, and I think that's a really dumb way to start your season. Put me on a campus with a passionate fan base.
Right.
Everybody's yelling. I turn it on. There's a great atmosphere. That's what makes college football special, and when you play the game the first one of the year in Ireland, you lose all of that. So it's a really dumb way to start. But one of the other things, and I ranted yesterday about Kurt Cignetti and his comments, and he's an example of this, of a guy who just, why SEC doesn't do it, why would I do it? Come play here twice, and we'll come to your place once. I'm not doing this. Do you know, and you hinted at this, how many, according to the preseason AP poll, now this could change, right? Like, if you tell me by the end of the year that Boise State's ranked in the top 25 and the right. Oregon-Boise game is technically a top 25 game, would not surprise me in the least. We only have on paper right now, in week one, week zero and week one, if you combine the two, there was one ranked matchup in the opening 2 weeks of the season, and it is Ole Miss versus Louisville.
Yep.
That is the only one.
And you've got to wait till Sunday night to get that one.
That's not even till Sunday night. You get the first full Saturday of college football, and based on the AP poll, again, that might change. Maybe UCLA and Cal are ranked by the end of the year, right? And that turns into a top 25 game. As of now, there is only one ranked matchup.
Yeah, Clemson's outside, the Clemson-LSU game.
Yes, it's not a top 25 game. That, again,
well,
could
only,
be one later.
If,
but
if I did my math, there's only 10 matchups of Power 4 teams.
That's a problem, man. That is a problem for the sport, where
so
you just ease into it.
Two of them on, well, two of them week zero.
Yeah.
So you have Carolina and TCU, NC State at Virginia.
Yep, those are two Power 4 games.
And then you have a bunch as the weekend ends up. So SMU, Florida State, the Louisville, Ole Miss, Wisconsin, and Notre Dame.
Those are all non-Saturday games, if I'm not wrong, right?
No, Wazoo at Washington is not now.
Yeah.
UCLA and Cal. You have Clemson, LSU.
I mean, this is the first full slate of your sport.
Exactly.
And you only have 10 potentially as you scroll through. I'm not hearing a lot of other ones you're throwing at me.
No, there was one on Friday.
And the, but that's
Miami at Stanford.
Yeah, that's an ACC game. They play week one of the season.
Yeah.
Although if you're Miami, you probably prefer to get that trip out of the way.
Colorado at Georgia Tech on Thursday, September 3rd.
That's one. That counts. That's your week one slate. That's your week one slate of the sport.
There's probably one other one there I'm skipping over. But
look, I will be on my couch, actually not on that first Saturday, I'll be in Eugene, and then eventually on my couch after I get home, getting ready to watch football all day. And so my butt will be on the couch, my feet will be up, I'll be watching football. So I'm not sitting here pretending as if I will not be excited and watching. It again highlights the need for, this is what the NFL just simply does not have to deal with. The NFL will sell you compelling matchups.
You have a Super Bowl rematch in the opening game. Let's
right out of the
go.
Game. And what did the NFL fight against? The idea of start. You're not going to start internationally. They're not going to do that. Their tradition is the Super Bowl champion
now,
raises
we'll
their
move
banner.
That game up a day,
sure,
to accommodate the international travel. But
yes, they'll change the way that they structure that. But then that's the way you turn it on. It's on NBC. There's Mike Tirico, and they're raising the banner, and this is Seattle, and they're the champ. Like, that's the way that
they're
the sport should
screaming
start.
Screaming at Chris Collinsworth
right.
on the second series.
If your first game out of the gate, it should be, if you're not going to do something as a full Saturday, like, give me that, like, Thursday night game and have it be Clemson at LSU. And I'm watching, and it's Death Valley, and the atmosphere is going crazy. Like, I don't know where this Ireland thing came from. It has not been around forever. I remember many years ago.
No, they don't do it every year.
No, it's not every year.
But it's been a regular thing.
I remember a number of years ago working here and getting ready for this. There was a South Carolina-North Carolina game. And it was at like 4 o'clock in the afternoon. We were getting ready to do the night show. And it was South Carolina was buzzing. And the atmosphere was great. And it was like a whiteout. And you turn it on, you're like, yep, this is the way the season should begin. Mm-hmm. And I don't know. I bemoan this every year. I can't wait for the sport to begin. The expectations are obviously certainly high for my team, and we'll see if they can finally get over the hump this year. But just as a fan of the overall health of the sport, that's a bummer for me that you don't have more juicy matchups. You'll get some in week two, right? Like Texas, Ohio State will be great. And you'll get your, you know, Miami, Oklahoma, or not Miami, but Michigan, Oklahoma game. So, like, eventually you'll get there, and there will be weekends. There certainly are on the calendar that everybody's already circling, like November 7th. That's going to be one of those don't plan anything all day kind of days. Just that being said, it's a bummer, man. Only one preseason, according to the preseason polls, top 25 matchup of week zero and week one combined. You only got one of them. It is Ole Miss versus Louisville. The irony there, too, is that if Ole Miss beats Louisville, guess who's outside of the top 25? Probably Louisville. First time, by the way, Louisville's started the season in the top 25 since Lamar Jackson returned after his Heisman Trophy. So it's been a hot minute for him. Wish we had more juicy matchups early in the season. I think it would benefit the sport tremendously. We have a lot to get to in the third hour of the radio program. Let's start in the National Football League. Can you believe this guy might actually play? Massive, massive expectations on this quarterback and head coach going into the season. I do have a little bit of college football to throw in there as well. An update on the Oregon State quarterback battle and also Group of Six in their pathway to the college football playoff. We'll touch on that briefly, but we'll start in the National Football League. Hour number three next. Dirt and Sprague, 105.1 FM. The Fam.